Hi, and welcome to another episode of Amana podcast. This is a collective of people, places, things, and actions that transcend us. They're conversations around what are your values, your higher virtues, how do you live towards those virtues, and what brings you undone, and how do you get back out of that? Today, we've got Gary Costin. So welcome, Gary.
Hi, Mark. Thanks for having me, and good to be here.
Absolutely. Gary and I met and are mates, and you'll notice by our accents, although we do live in Yankee land, that we're Aussies, and became good mates a few years back and have had some great times both professionally and personally together. And today we're going to have a discussion around kind of Gary's journey and what that entails both professionally and personally, around virtues and some of his adventures. So, Gary, would you be willing to share with us around, let's start with your business and how you set up your business and what that's about and how it came into being?
Yeah, sure. No problem. Yeah, so I've set up International Institute for Executive Training probably now 13 to 15 years ago, I think. This was born from like most of my career being in an organizational development space, consulting background, and L&D. There was a need I identified in the market many years ago that the level of consulting and work that I do, the gap in the market was I guess it was around providing like skill sets, behavioral lessons and techniques to executives that perhaps come out and work in an environment, executive environment, but really don't know how to execute out on, you know, using a lot of those tools and skills and techniques they may have learnt. And so that's where I identified a gap. And subsequently, 13 years later, we're still going strong around the world.
Yeah, talking around the world. So I imagine, did you start this in Australia?
Yeah. So this was born in Australia. And so how this came about was, I was working for one of the largest telco companies in Australia, Optus, and I was heading up a division in Optus, and I established them as a training organization. And very quickly, the department or division I set up became the most profitable division within the company. And on the back of that, some friends of mine had taken up senior positions in Singapore, one large organization in Singapore. And he said, look, on the back of what you've done in Australia, you know, we'd heard about the success that you had. And they asked, would you come over and talk to my executives? And I said, well, okay, sure. I don't know how that qualifies me to come over and talk about it and stand up in front of a whole bunch of people, but I thought, sure, why not? And if only I knew now what I'd known then, I would have charged him a lot more. So subsequently, I went over, I gave a talk about, you know, setting up, a division or a company, what was required, the resources, the business planning, the marketing plan, putting everything together and then executing and then delivering on that. And basically the executives loved that. They told some other people that were heading up some companies in Singapore. They contacted me and said, we heard what you did with Patrick's company, the friend of mine, and would you come and do it with ours? And I said, excuse me, who are you? And how do you know me? And I went, oh, okay. And basically that's how I was born into setting up and doing what I do now.
Yeah, terrific. One of the things that I have in my office here is a global pin board, and I've pinned a lot of the places I've been to and the places that I would like to get to. And I would consider I've certainly seen a lot of the world, but I certainly have a long way to go. And running into you, I went, oh my gosh, this guy's seen corners that most people didn't know existed. So because this is a podcast of transcending things and virtues, I'd be interested to kind of take a leap here from that, from your setting up your business, but how you've landed and some of these interesting places you've landed in and how that's transcended you, I would imagine, or transformed you.
Yeah.
And some of the experiences that you've had, because they've really been in, like I said, corners that most of us aren't even aware of.
Yeah, that's for sure, Mark. You know, one of the you know, privileges I've been able to attain by, you know, setting up my business and then, you know, getting to these countries around the world and being able to offer, you know, sort of a valuable impact in terms of knowledge transfer, skills, experience, and help individuals and companies and governments grow. It's certainly, you know, one of the highest highlights of why I do what I do. You know, it's fantastic to see that transformation occur within you know, people and countries and companies. To touch on, you know, where I've been, I'm not sure how long you want the podcast to go for.
Give us about five really remote places that most people couldn't even pronounce, including myself.
Yeah, okay. let's see. I've been, I went to Ethiopia, and then I went down into sort of the southern part of Ethiopia, near where they're having some problems at the moment, actually. So that was very interesting. I was working with the Ministry of Finance in Ethiopia, and one of the projects that I was heavily involved in was the damming of the Nile, and that's what they're currently doing in Ethiopia as a massive infrastructure project, and obviously power generation and so on. And so I was lucky enough to sort of travel to sort of a remote part of Ethiopia, going through like some landscapes that you could easily describe as Mars. you know, red dust, rocky geography, you know, burnt trees almost, and then, you know, in the middle of this, you know, sort of horizon, you like, it's almost like a mirage appears of these huts and villages, and some of the people come out, and they're covered in red dust to prevent, you know, burning, and mud almost, and they're colourful and warming, and so that would be one of the experiences I would sort of mention, which was amazing. Another experience I can share with you, lucky enough to do quite a lot of work in Africa in general, but in Nairobi in Kenya. I have some partners there that do a lot of the groundwork for me in terms of, you know, marketing and event coordination for some of the seminars and conferences that we do. So I went out on one of the times and went to the Maasai warriors and the tribes, and proceeded to, it's customary that you drink blood from the cow.
There you go.
Yeah, and needless to say, on a 38 degree day heat, which is about 105 Celsius, and you drink some curdled hot blood, I can tell you, it you hold your nose and do it quickly.
that'll transform something, I'm sure.
Yeah, that's right. So any parasites I had in my gut, I'm sure I got a few more.
And I'll throw one in there too, and I still talk about this a lot and I'm forever grateful to you, is that you brought me along to one of these trips on Nairobi. And I had been to Nairobi on a safari before and out to the Maasai landscape and met the tribes, and some of the things that, you know, a term, I don't know who came up with it, but tribonomics, yeah. Learning how all these different tribes can get along, how they come together, what works, what doesn't, and particularly coming from our little island of Australia, it's very different than the way we were raised, you in the bush, me in the city. Right. Now we've kind of flipped it here where you're more in the city of Los Angeles and I'm in the little country town of Ojai. But that was a great experience for me. And then further along, you took me, well, you shipped me off really to Malawi, which was a 33-hour flight, and being the poorest country GDP-wise on the planet, it was a very interesting experience working with government officials and how things work there. And I continue to tell the story of my taxi driver who had 25 wives and his minister had 52. And I thought, how do you handle any of that? It's just very, very different from the ways that I had been raised, or how you have these conversations around business, government, structure, skill sets. It certainly transformed me. So, you know that your good works are having an effect beyond yourself. Having said all that, and I know that you've done lots of work in Asia and Europe, and you really have been all around from South America and the States. So what has led you to these things, Gary? What do you care about? Why do you keep going? What, in terms of a value set or a virtue, what kind of leads your torch through these mazes?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I think, Mark, I alluded to it before, but, you know, it's very much I've recognized my ability to put together, you know, a good set of information, if you like, in various different like areas, whether it be spiritual and behavioral and psychological, whether it is technical required, and like skill sets and experiences, and weave that into a good communication flow that seems to resonate with many different cultures around the world. And that ability to be able to connect with vast, you know, countries and cultures and as you mentioned, like diverse people, and then explaining it like information broadly, information in a way that's relevant for them to actually see, you know, benefit that they can take back and help improve their life. Mm-hmm. You know, I think that is one of the biggest, you know, impacts to is doing that for people. And I guess being, you know, I guess another thing is being a servant leader, just like the big man.
Mm. You know? So is there a virtue or a value that in a word that you kind of that leads that for you?
Yeah, I think so. I think for me and in my experience, I think a lot of it is, if I can say, you know, virtue or values. I think it's, you know, like integrity, you know, without sort of sounding too cliche or corny, but you know, I genuinely, you know, believe that. So just having integrity, you know, for what you do and, you know, your belief system about how you make a difference to the world and what impact you can have and leave a mark and a legacy and a positive one and one that helps people. So I think integrity, you know, is good. Leading by example, which sort of lends itself a little to that. And then mm-hmm. I think also, you know, like, yeah, I just sort of, you know, hard work. I've always sort of been brought up, you know, I was brought up on a farming, you know, vineyard background in Australia, and my dad worked 7 days a week, you know, 12 hours a day. And when he and mum went on a holiday, if they went on holiday, rarely, you know, any more than 3 days. And he was like, oh, I think I better get back to work, you know. And I sort of enjoy that work ethic. So they're the sort of things that keep me going.
Yeah, terrific. And for our listeners, is there, out of one of your courses, now you have an array of courses that you offer, from leadership to communications to supply chains, but is there something with integrity that you could pull out as a tool or a model that you help people with that leads them to their own integrity?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, so I do a lot of work, around transformation. So transformational leadership, I think, is big, given the current environment that everyone's experienced, and I mean everyone around the world in the last, you know, 18 months with COVID. I think that's like that transformation and adaptability, agility, and you know, the change and the change management. I've no matter what I've done over the 15 years, whenever I start, you know, talking about agility and transformation and change management, it resonates with everyone. Everyone can see a need within themselves, but within an organization, because, you know, it's ever changing. And so, you know, to have those skills and awareness and tools really about what to do and how to do it when things occur is hugely, hugely beneficial.
And so is there a particular, I'm drilling down here, because I'd like people to have a takeaway of, and I know I'm hitting you with this kind of off the top of my head here, but something that would be very practical that someone could go, oh, this is how you do transformation, or this is a process that helps me look at change.
Yeah, sure. So just on the change, I mean, I use a number of different models, but one thing that seems to resonate well is it's called Cotter's 8-step process. Mm-hmm. And so John Cotter is a famous psychologist and entrepreneur, has been using this for many, many years. And I've managed to find a lot of information when writing a number of our programs that we deliver. I've written a lot of the content for it and I guess modified, amalgamated that into you know, how I see it and what I've learned over the years. And so that would be a good framework to use, the John Cotter 8-step model in change management.
What would be one of those steps? Do you recall off the top of your head?
Yeah, sure. So obviously, I think I mentioned before, so you know, in any change process, any transformation, a leader or an individual or an organization needs to be able to, first and foremost, be able to articulate and communicate a clear, sound vision about why it is we need to change, what the benefits are of change, and not just tell me what the benefits are, but actually involve me in the decision-making process about, well, what's my vision for this change as well.
So, and understanding the why factor.
Correct. Yeah, yeah, absolutely. So it's that. And so, you know, having a clear vision, one thing that's really interesting that I've learned and in consulting that I see is within corporate, and I think this stems from teachings from universities and in the 80s perhaps, is a lot of organizations I find envelope themselves in too much corporate speak. Mm-hmm. And while I think, you know, there is a need to impress sometimes people with your vocabulary, I'm not sure that level of speak resonates through to all the key stakeholders. Mm-hmm. And so one thing I do is sort of debunk the, you know, the myth around, you know, trying to create as much corporate speak as you can and then deliver a message, or in this case a vision around that, and having the impact through the organization with key stakeholders to drive it, you the statistics and the studies show that you fall short by up to 70%.
Mm-hmm.
And so one of the things I look at and doing is, first of all, have a clear vision about your change or a project or an initiative, and be able to describe that vision to me in under 8 seconds.
Is there a company that you work with that you feel like got a good hold of that, or certainly did efforts?
What? Yeah, absolutely. There's a company I worked with. It was a large mining company in Australia called Downer Mining. So EDI, Downer Mining. Mm-hmm. And I was able to work with some of their senior executives, and we were doing a planning, you know, strategy planning session. And this was part of a project. And basically what happened was we had a good cross-section of stakeholders in the strategic planning session. There were people from on site, like the workers. We had some suppliers come in. We had obviously your normal HR people. We had some executives on board. So there was a good cross-section of people in the session. And, of course, as I mentioned, you know, I was going around working with trying to get creative and wordsmithing with everyone. And, you know, a lot of the executives and HR and a lot of the suppliers, you know, were talking about to be the preeminent and using a lot of corporate speak, and to be the excellence of service and
leading the industry.
Yeah. That's, and I mean, you know, if you shut your eyes and just heard that, you would think it's any company, right? And so it didn't really give any clear, distinguishable, you know, traits that people could latch onto, which really drives culture and drives change, right? And so it took obviously someone from the site to stand up and basically this person said, well, the truth of the matter is, and it was a mining iron ore company, and they said, the truth of the matter is we dig dirt cheap. And as you can laugh, and everyone else in the laugh was almost like, you know, drop the mic moment.
Yeah, brilliant.
And exactly. And that was an example that we worked through, and everyone, and I just stood up and clapped, and I think, you know, this is what I've been telling you. And like I was just saying to before, you know, a lot of the meaning gets lost with too much confusion and corporate speak, because in this day and age we're fighting for every little piece of communication with social media, with news, with friends, and you know, when you're at work, and if the information is too congested, convoluted, you lose the meaning and impact. And so when this guy said we dig dirt cheap and you're an iron ore company, everyone just went, you know, hallelujah,
nailed it. Yeah. I love it.
Yeah, so
you know, I found that too in my work, that I try and move towards almost a mantra or a very short statement that's punchy. I love the mission of the Ritz-Carlton. You know, we are ladies and gentlemen serving ladies and gentlemen. It just says a lot, you know, and it has honor and pride, and all kinds of values can be extracted from that.
That's so true, yeah.
Going back to your value of integrity, I'd be interested, and I think we all get tested on this, no doubt.
Yeah.
Where have you been tested, or where do you come undone with your integrity? And knowing you, I know you have good integrity, but I no doubt know that it gets tested, particularly in some of these maybe other countries, or, you know, just business itself can be challenging. And when it comes to contracts or people you know, relationships you're working with, do you have an example of that, Gary?
Yeah, sure. Look, you know, it's interesting, you know, there is a number, like you touched on it before. So working in some of the developing countries, the governance that maybe is there in more developed countries is lacking, and subsequently, and it's interesting, you know, I have thought about this a while, but it's interesting. It doesn't mean that they're trying to be misleading and do it like unethically, but sometimes that's been built in their culture. And one of the examples I can give you is, well, you mentioned, you know, like in Africa. So it was one thing that was, you know, discussed with me by someone very senior in government. He goes, yes, we're in government, but we have what we call tribal ticks. So it's not politics, but tribal ticks. And I went, oh, please do explain. And so he was saying, well, you have your system of doing things in government in the West, where there is this, you know, a hierarchy and there's governance and, you know, ethical procedures. And you know, for the most part, that's fine. But he said, what you have to understand is we still have a very strong cultural, you know, relationships with how we, you know, live our lives. And that extends into, you know, a Western framework in terms of government. And I went, okay. And he said, so for example, if the chief, you know, wanted you after harvest in the village, wanted you to, you had to bring all your crop into the chief, and he would, you know, distribute the crop to the village as he saw fit, because that's why he's the chief. And some of the corruption, we may call it here, that you might see in some of these less, you know, developed countries, is an example of that, where people at who's been nominated in a senior position in government, let's say, if they determine that they want to allocate contracts to certain, you know, contractors or procurement, then that can be seen as, well, that's my prerogative because I'm the chief.
Yeah, got it.
And we may look at that and think, yeah, well, that's just biased and corrupt. And it's like, well, no, because that's why I'm nominated the chief.
Right.
And it takes a little bit to sort of digest. But once you, you know, get explained that, you can tend to sort of understand the, I guess, the contrast of how we think and how they do and how they're trying to adopt a system that that we have in place.
And that's a great example. And anything from, you know, let's call it professional, personal, where your integrity gets tested, and let's say if you do screw up, because, you know, we're kind of mistake machines.
Right.
And, you know, that's why God, I think, gave us forgiveness. Yes. Not erases on our head, but for forgiveness. Where have you kind of been, God, I feel like I've stepped out here, and how do you get back into your integrity?
Yeah, good question. I mean, look, it has, you know, been posed to me, you know, there's no question. You know, it could be getting awarded, you know, certain contracts where, you know, particularly in government, in some of these less developed countries, where the procurement person who's issuing the contract, you sometimes need to pay, and that was explained to me very clearly, that I need to pay an additional service fee so they could process the contract.
Mm-hmm.
Which was never a service fee at all. It was a fee direct to the person so they would make sure that I got the contract.
Gotcha.
And, you know, and it could have easily been done, and no one would have, no problem at all, and would have just been like, look, I could easily have gotten away with this and would have been no problem. But, you know, then once you've done that once, you've got that laying over your head, and is that an expectation going forward? And is that something that, you know, it took me so long to build my brand and my reputation just to tarnish it in one decision. I you know, it was very easy to get myself back on track regarding it, because, you know, you only get one last name unless you want to change it. But you know what I mean? You only have one last name, and unless you want to change your name, then you're stuck with it. So whatever decision you make, you better make a good one when it comes to your brand and your company's brand.
Yeah. And so, you know, integrity obviously crosses over from professional to personal. However, let's move on to your personal life more, in the sense of, what would be a value or virtue that you really care about just in life in general, and how do you kind of lead, how does that lead you in your life?
Yeah, that's a good question in personal. I mean, you know, again, obviously that integrity is there, as you said, but I'd like to think, you know, certainly I think I like to do a lot of things with a lot of humility. Like, you know, quite humble and being, you know, having a lot of humility about things you do and, you know, just get up and get about it and just do it without sort of making a big sort of song and dance about things. That's why I'm probably, I should probably learn more to use more social media to demonstrate the things I've done. But I guess, you know, that's my humility coming out.
Humility's a great quality. And when do you find yourself out of humility, and then how do you get yourself back in?
Yeah, it's a good question. I think, you know, possibly, yeah, that's a good question. I try to think I'm mostly pretty humble. I mean, you know, I do things. I don't need a lot of, you know, recognition for what I have or haven't done. I sort of my best judge of my own character and my own, you know, approach to things. So I couldn't really give you a specific example, like, you know, once I've sort of not been humble about something I've done or a situation I'm in and, you know, not thought that, you know, I need to pull back a bit, you know, because I think it's like, look, you know, just get on with it and do it and, you know, yeah. So I don't, in a short answer to your question, I haven't really got a specific example where I can say, look, I didn't think I've acted with humility here, but, you know, I checked myself and this is what I did. I don't really have something there to sort of latch onto.
Yeah. So just to give some of my thoughts around this for you even is, and knowing you is, And this is my compliment to you. I don't know many people, Gary, who have built an institution, gone to the places that they've done without an institution underneath them or a partnership or another force of nature. And I know you're lucky enough to have a beautiful wife that supports you and both professionally and personally, but you really do wear your own hat. And one of the things that I notice with you, similar to myself, I would like to say, is that I find you a collector of hearts. Yeah. You find people that have good hearts, that care about what they're doing and their lives, and that they usually got a colorful character to them or an interesting story set behind them.
Yes.
And the way that you go about that, in my observation, is a very Aussie approach, which I call is shake and bake. It's testing people to go, you know, who are you? What are you? And Australia, as an ochreism, if you will, is to knock someone down very quickly, but not too far that they've fallen, but just to make sure that their head's not too big on their shoulders, but at the same time they've got enough confidence and here we are as mates. And I think you in let's say the humble approach glorify that, and particularly because you don't live in Australia, it stands out even more because other cultures aren't used to that. I certainly see it in America. They're like, you can't say things like that.
Yeah, well,
yes, I can, because I'm free and you're not, and you're bound by your own prejudice and sensitivities, and I've got no malice sitting behind it. I'm just here going, how are you? So I love that we can jive and joke about that. I think we have a common person that we don't know. I don't know him, but Jim Jefferies, as a comedian, yes, from Australia that performs a lot here in the States and lives in the States, has amplified that also. And I certainly get a good laugh out of, you know, and good camaraderie out of that Australian approach. I don't know if you want to touch on that at all.
But, yeah, no. Well, look, it's interesting you brought that up because, you know, I've met him once earlier in his career a long time ago, socially, and what you see is what you get with him, and I really relate to and resonate with his, you know, straight up directness when it comes to issues. And I mean, if anyone out there listening hasn't heard or seen some of his material, I do recommend you do. It's quite funny, but just a warning. There is some colourful use of vocabulary, so if you're offended, put some earplugs in. But I quite like him, and so yeah, I share that that with you, Mark. I quite like him, and further to that, I did get your picture text message about the dates of his performance, and by the way, I haven't responded to that, but I'll do it now, and we are definitely going in the front row.
I love it. I love it. Sitting humbly, of course.
Yeah, no, sitting humbly, legs crossed.
Yeah. Just to come full circle here, Gary, could you share what the name of your business is, where people could find you if they're interested in this type of work,
sure.
And the type of clientele that you served?
Yeah, no problem. Okay, so the institute is called the International Institute for Executive Training, or IIET, and the website to find us on is very simple. It's just www.iiet.us. In terms of the clients, I mean, look, over the years, I mean, we have a very prolific, list of clients around the world. So, mining oil and gas companies, Shell Oil have been one, Rio Tinto mining or iron ore company in Australia. We can look at a number of banks around the world, Barclays Bank around the world, Fiji Development Bank. I work with. I've been into the Congo, working with a community bank that helps people get micro loans. Doing that, I presented and worked with the International Atomic Energy Agency in the UN in Vienna just before COVID. So, the clients vary, Coca-Cola, around the world, so the list goes on. The website sort of gives you a fair indication of some of the companies and industry and government I've worked with. So that gives you a little bit about, the profile and sort of what we do, and the website will sort of get you in contact with me if we can assist.
Yeah, terrific. And I'll be sure that this goes into the podcast notes, so anyone looking who may be in the corporate space, or if you're just looking for some professional leadership, Gary's a wonderful person that has helped a lot of entrepreneurs amongst corporate in all kinds of different industries. I consider you the same as me. We're industry agnostic.
Yes.
But from the music world to the entertainment world, you've been across a lot of these industries. So please, if you feel called, Gary's details will be in the notes of the podcast. And I just want to give you a heartfelt thanks for being on my podcast. This is my second podcast. And thank you for being a great friend, a great mate. You've always supported me both professionally and personally. And I have the best times with you. So cheers.
Yeah, thanks, Mark. And look, likewise, it's always a pleasure, when you did a few jobs for me, we went on and did some work, it was fantastic and you did a fantastic job. The feedback was amazing. Even within your own, career, I've seen what you've been doing, working with some high-profile entrepreneurs over the last 4 years, and the types of, work you did for them was far and beyond what anyone, could ask. And I don't think they fully understood how valuable you were to them. But I saw the tremendous amount of work and results you achieved. So, you need to be commended and recognised for that. So I'll do that now. And
yeah, I appreciate it.
Yeah, no, mate, and on a personal level, yes, mate. It's always fun. for those listening, Mark is an amazing golfer. I am not, and subsequently he's taken some time out to teach me some of the finer aspects of golf, seeing I've not spent much time. So we're due to probably do that in the next couple of weeks, I would imagine.
Oh, that sounds great. All right, Gary, well, thanks again, and thank you, listeners, for tuning in. More
thanks,
to come.
Mark. Yeah, thanks, Mark. All the best, and keep it up. I think it's going to be a fantastic podcast series.
Appreciate it. Bye for now.
Cheers, mate. Bye.